And now, Bill Resnick and Solomon Duke.
Solomon Duke, welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Solomon Duke is a student at Franklin High School. Yesterday was the International Student Climate Strike. Over 1,000 cities, youth participated. It's clearly going to become a international movement that will gain power in Portland. One of the organizers was, in fact, Solomon Duke. He was one of the co-founders, basically, in the early days of the Portland Youth Climate Council about 3 years ago when he was a sophomore and at Franklin. Solomon, how did you get involved in climate issues? How did you become aware of the threat to you, to life? How did it make you feel?
Well, I was fortunate enough to go to Sunnyside Environmental School. So I've kind of been surrounded in curriculum that's kind of been focused around the climate and the environment for most of my life. Really, for me, though, it was around in middle school that I really started to realize how serious this problem is and just how little is being done to address it, especially through some of the service projects that we do at Sunnyside. Like, I remember in sixth grade working to get petitions passed to stop coal exports throughout the country, and just how scary all of climate change really is. I didn't really realize that till middle school.
Yeah, it's so threatening. What do you say to the students who may not want to hear about what really is a grave threat to human life, in fact, all life on the planet?
You just have to accept it, you know. You can't really deny it. The IPCC said, you know, we got 12 years before it's really, like, almost too late, it feels like. We should have been working on this years before we actually began, and it's a problem that affects every single person on the entire planet. Some people definitely more than others, but every single person is affected, and you can't hide from that fact.
So you tell them about the threat. Is it useful for you to also talk about the fact that we, in fact, have the resources and the technology and the rest? Is that part of the discourse, that, in fact, the problem can be solved and we have to be part of the solution?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely talk about that as well, because we do have the resources. You know, we have the capabilities to really stop most of these problems. We don't have to use all these fossil fuels that we're using, or even, like, the average American diet is so focused around meat, and especially red meat, which accounts for so much pollution. About 70% of the habitable land is used for meat.
I mean agricultural land.
Yeah. Of agricultural land is used for meat, yeah. And that only produces, like, I think 18% of our calories. It's very little amount. It's a very small amount of food for how much land and resources we're putting into it. And we just do we make all these decisions for ourselves that really, really hurt the environment. And we have the capability to use solar energy, wind energy. There's so many other ways to get energy than coal and oil and natural gas.
When you talk to other students, what's your sense of how they respond?
I find that a lot of students don't care as much about the problem as I feel they should, because a lot of the effects of climate change you can't see. You can't really experience the climate changing because it's happening over a long period of time and it's happening all over the world. Whereas, like, a lot of other problems, you can see it, and that makes it makes it a lot easier to be concerned about something that you can see is happening than something you can't.
This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm talking to Solomon Duke, who's a senior at Franklin High School, one of the organizers of the Portland climate strike. It happened Friday, yesterday. This is being recorded on Saturday. Solomon, tell us, how did you get together in Portland and plan and bring off what was a tremendous group of people, much more than anybody expected, which caused a bit of a problem? Tell us about it. How did you get together and do it?
Well, a lot of people had been working on it before I hopped on board. I hopped on a lot closer to the strike, but I got on through the Portland Youth Climate Council because some other people in that group were working on it, and they asked me to come and help out because we didn't have much of an appearance from Franklin. And so getting some people from every school was very important to us. And, you know, we kind of met just the weekend before we met during the Portland Sunrise launch. And before their party for that, we met and, like, discussed our plans for the strike. A lot of it was done just even through text, you know, like Instagram group chat, Google Hangout, video chatting. It didn't have to all be done in person. And a lot of it was done on our own, at our own individual schools. For example, for me, going to Franklin, putting up posters about it in my classes, giving announcements about it. Some schools, it was a lot harder to put up posters. Some Portland public schools even counted posters about the strike as vandalism and would take them down. And if they caught you putting them up, you'd get in trouble as if you were vandalizing the school. And so for some students, it's a lot harder to advertise the strike than it was for me. Another thing that was really great about working with people from so many different groups, Affected Generation, Portland Youth Climate Council, Ravencore, is that you get lots of different perspectives and you can make sure certain things aren't left out. So, like, for us, for example, we found that there's a lot missing from the environmental and climate justice side of climate change, which we felt was very important to add to this because a lot of climate change movements don't really address that. And it's a really important thing. It's important that people understand that there's a lot of inequity that goes along with this. And generally lower income people and people of color are affected a lot more than upper class individuals, as far as like pollution, air quality, certain places, rising sea levels, they don't have anywhere to go. It's definitely a problem that affects some people more than others, and it's important that the movement included that as well. So just like making sure all these different point of views are seen is really great.
Solomon Duke, how do you respond to people saying, oh, you're too young to be involved in these major issues of policy? Leave it up to us responsible adults.
Well, I feel that the adults haven't been responsible. I feel that they have had ample opportunity to address this problem throughout most of their lives and haven't, because people always see this as a problem of the future, when in reality it's a problem right now that needs to be fixed right now and really should have been addressed a long, long time ago. And I feel that you don't have to be old to be smart, to be responsible. You just have to be able to see the problems that are happening and be smart enough to find solutions for them.
Yeah.
And I also find that younger people can be more adaptable even, and it can be difficult for people who have grown their whole life kind of denying climate change or denying that this is a serious problem that needs to happen now. It's hard for them to realize that it really does have to happen now and they have to change right away.
Right. What about this line saying, well, yeah, I'm young, but I'm old enough to read, and I've read material from the UN, from all climate scientists, that in fact we're in deep, deep trouble, and young people can sound the alarm just as well as anybody else. Something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. If you're old enough to read and actually understand what is happening, if you go and you just go on your computer right away and research IPCC and just look at all the information they put out on their website for any single person to see.
And all the research and all of the studies.
Yeah, there's so much research because 97% of scientists agree that this is happening. So many scientists have done research on this. NASA has done research on this. The information is so accessible that you don't have to have access to really difficult resources to get the information you need to understand what's going on.
Is there something you want to say in conclusion?
I guess what I'd like to end with is just that it's important that we make changes now because the clock is ticking. We have less than 12 years to make serious changes before we're going to see some really drastic effects. We're already seeing such drastic effects. Natural disasters and storms are happening much more frequently than they were before and at a much larger scale. And it's not really, it shouldn't be a problem of cost, because the amount of expenses that are going to be spent dealing with these problems are going to outweigh the expenses of fixing them before they even happen by so much. Really, we just need to buckle down and finish what needs to happen. We need to make the changes that need to happen as quickly as possible.
The strike began at City Hall.
That was the thing, is there's so many people. We tried to tape off the front of City Hall, and people just got past the tape. And so there's all these people up on the steps of City Hall that weren't supposed to be there. And we had to cut the entire rally early. Joanne Hardesty was, like, worried they were going to, like, break a bunch of, like, the historical pillars and stuff on City Hall. A lot of speakers didn't get to talk because of that. So, like, for me, I was going to speak up at the podium, but because it got cut off early and did the march, and so I actually spoke not at the podium, but later at the waterfront, I spoke directly to Coin Six.
What was your talk about that you did at this Coin Six thing?
I was talking about the importance of climate literacy curriculum in schools, but this was specifically for PPS, because the PPS Board of Education actually unanimously passed a resolution in 2016, like, that would allow for the implementation of climate literacy curriculum, and they really haven't done much on it. Like, they created this board, the PPS Climate Justice Committee, to, like, work to do it, but the administration has been kind of blocking this group for all these years and not really letting them get anywhere.
Oh, really? That's not so unusual.
Like, the board has been completely supportive. They've been like, yes, we want this curriculum. This would be great. Students need to learn this. But the administration, and if I'm naming names, really, specifically the superintendent, Guerrero, has really been trying to block it, especially with the guaranteed viable curriculum. They're the whole top-down education that doesn't allow for any changes or anything, any alteration.
Oh, because of the test business.
Yeah.
If they tested you on climate change, you can be sure they would stick it in. You targeted the city. That's really a terrific strategy. Cities have to begin acting. They are the stewards of their area. And even if the national government is controlled by people who, or their profits are more precious than human life, but the city, it seems to me, they're much closer and they can be pushed. And Portland really hasn't done very much. They have a beautiful plan, a really well-illustrated plan, the Climate Action Plan. It was really a terrific plan. It wins awards. But outside of that, they really haven't done much, especially compared to California or Washington. Is there going to be more happening? What's next?
There will be more strikes happening. This is really just the beginning. I think this is a really great beginning, you know, happening all over the world. This must have been one of the largest youth-led events ever in the history of the planet.
Oh, by far, yes.
And so just starting off with that is amazing, but it's only going to get bigger, you know. There's going to be more strikes. I think even in May there's going to be another strike or something going on. And so, yeah, there's plenty more to come.
Solomon Duke, it was really good talking to you. Keep up the good work for many years. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem.
Bill Resnick in a second round of interviews with two students from Lincoln High School, Shreya Chinnam and Nora Glynn. They're both involved with their school's Environmental Justice Club and worked to organize students for the youth climate strike that happened this past Friday, the 15th. We'll turn now to Bill. Bill Resnick.
Shreya Chinnam and Nora Glynn, welcome to KVU.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hi, Bill. It's good to be here.
And hi to our audience. So last Friday, March 15th, it might be remembered as an important day for humanity on the planet, because last Friday saw the birth of a movement of young people demanding action on global heating. The action was in the form of a student climate strike. It happened in at least 1,000 cities in over 100 countries in every time zone, saying they were not going to cooperate in the destruction of the natural systems, that is, the ecological systems, whose healthy functioning is the basis of life, including us Homo sapiens. The strike was a movement without designated leaders. Rather, around the world, hundreds of thousands of young people were organizing in their localities. These young people are inheriting the planet, and all signs are that movement will strengthen, become powerful, and maybe soon become one of the forces that, in fact, reconstructed how we humans produce and consume and live our lives, which is absolutely necessary, say the climate scientists. So welcome to KABU. You young people have done a great job at building now a movement that could be quite powerful. Let's start, though, not with the movement, but with how do they get people get involved in the climate and the climate issue and the threat to your lives?
So I feel like I started being pretty involved in social justice and always caring about human rights, but I always felt like climate change was something more based in the scientific community and something that I was pretty detached from and that other people would have to solve for me because I wasn't that into science. But in our geography class this year, we kind of learned about the intersectionality between social justice and climate change and that these are real people being affected and real stories. This isn't something that's going to happen in the future and that there's people's lives at stake here. So I feel like that's kind of how I got involved in caring about climate change and the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm. And Shreya?
Well, I've always learned about climate change in my classes, and I've always been interested in like the science aspect of it, but it wasn't until this year where I took an IB geography course with Nora, mm-hmm. where we started learning about, like she said, the social aspects to this climate crisis and how clearly correlated a lot of our issues are with the climate crisis. And just knowing that it's a now problem and not a problem that's going to be there in the future.
And the seriousness of the problem. A lot of people are sort of in denial about it. How did it come home to you that this is going to be something that's going to inevitably severely impact your life?
I think that my classes, my science classes, and has done a great job explaining to me why it's happening. And also I see it every single day. Just a few weeks ago, the end of February, like, or March, and it was snowing. So I think that's a big enough sign to tell me that this is real.
Mm-hmm. Or even if we think about the wildfires that happened this mm-hmm. summer, these are not like natural disasters that are happening around us. These are because of the human impact that we're mm-hmm. having on this earth.
Yeah. And we also see it even on TV. The melting of the glaciers, right?
Right.
And the destruction and the acidification of the ocean and the bleaching of the coral, all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many signs of, and the extreme events. One of the things, a contribution of the weather, the constant weather reports, mm-hmm. and they love
right.
to show these hurricanes and the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that they really love on TV are fires. You know, mm-hmm. big fires are
right.
great. But they're no longer happening in buildings because we have building codes, you know, and electrical codes. So fires really are mm-hmm. very rare in the United States, a big fire in a building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What isn't rare, of course, is a big fire in the wilderness.
Right.
But they still show them, right?
And
all kinds of weather events, the huge floods, like the Midwest flooding.
Droughts.
You know, unprecedented floods in Nebraska, Wisconsin, mm-hmm, Iowa. Mm-hmm. You get your fill of climate change. It seems mm-hmm. to me it's really around us if you realize that that's what's happening.
Yeah. I think oftentimes the media definitely reports on floods and reports on wildfires, but ignores to actually tie it back to the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really big thing. Public isn't hearing enough, especially because when they are reporting these things, it just seems like it's not an international priority because they aren't talking about this on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're also under a lot of corporate pressure to do a balanced approach, they call it. So balance is to find some of the scientists who are mostly employed by the fossil fuel industry in one way or another. They come mm-hmm. to conferences, even if they're part of a university. They're given research grants and come to conferences and in Hawaii in the winter. You know, 2% of scientists do that, but those people are somehow seen as equal to the 98% of scientists and the people who are doing the research. So it's not reported as sort of a fact. It's a sort of a controversy.
Mm-hmm. Or a theory.
Yeah.
It's a theory. It's yeah.
I know. I feel like we've talked about this before. And like people like to focus on climate deniers and thinking about like changing their mind. But I feel like we have a strong enough group of people who are willing to fight for changing policy around climate change, where we need to stop focusing on trying to change their mind and actually like as a group be willing to fight instead of trying to constantly like focus on these climate deniers, because there are so few scientists who are actually denying it. And I feel like a lot of the media tries to cover these deniers instead of how we're going to actually change things.
Mm-hmm. This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Shreya Chinnam and Nora Glenn, who are part of the Environmental Justice Club at Lincoln High School. They were two of many around the city who organized their school to go on the climate strike. It was last Friday, March 15th, 2019. It's a day that may reverberate in history as the beginning, at least the coming out party, for a huge movement of young people who are demanding climate action. Let's talk about that, the youth climate strike in Portland. What happened at Lincoln?
So we are one of the only schools within the district that has an environmental justice class, which our teacher, Mr. Swinehart, created. So we're really privileged in order to have that. But the Environmental Justice Club were the people who were organizing this strike. Bella Klosterman, who was really the main organizer from Lincoln, she ended up having to go to Colorado. So I just wanted to like shout her out for doing a lot of the organizing. But it was really about having people understand why exactly we're walking out. We didn't want people to just be skipping school on this day. We wanted everyone to have a real reason why they were walking out and what exactly it meant to walk out. So we did a lot of outreach within our school, trying to get freshmen, especially. We talked to every freshman at our school takes a fly class, so we went and did presentations.
Freshman Leadership Inquiry.
Yeah, and so we went to, me and Shreya went together and talked to a lot of those classes and really printing out flyers, just trying to get the word spread about what exactly mm-hmm. we were doing.
Yeah, I think leading up to it for about a week, we were pretty much talking to everyone that we would see and just giving them flyers, educating them on this movement, which was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge. It was huge, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, it was so huge that most of the people couldn't hear the speakers, including me, who is one of those old people. Very few, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, a sprinkle of adults, of super adults. It was a tremendous outpouring. And when I asked people, well, I use this as an excuse just to get out of school, they got angry at me. Are you kidding? This is a serious issue. That was good for me to hear. Mm-hmm. Where do you think the youth movement is going?
I don't think that we can talk about this movement without talking about Greta Thunberg, a 16-year-old Swedish activist who basically started this entire movement. And she would leave every Friday and from her school, and she would go sit outside the Swedish parliament. And I think she's on like week 30 now. Mm-hmm. And she does it every single week. And mm-hmm. now millions of people around the world are joining her. And I think that's amazing. That's monumental.
She built on, it seems to me, the shoulders or stood on the shoulders of a lot of people before her. I mean, she was sort of in some ways like Martin Luther King. There's an old a saying that was by one of Martin Luther King's closest friends and allies who said, you know, Martin didn't make the movement. Mm-hmm. The movement made Martin.
Yeah.
And Greta was the same. Now, Martin Luther King deserves a huge amount of credit. Mm-hmm. He's an incredible person and a spokesperson. Mm-hmm. And Greta was really that YouTube thing and everything was. But I think you young people, so many,
I agree.
We're organizing before that. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And others. And you were listening to the climate scientists and others.
Yeah. Well, I feel like if we're going to talk about, like, any grassroots movement, I mean, of course, like, we're all standing on the backs of each other and we're all learning from history and what has happened in the past, especially regarding civil disobedience.
Right.
And so I think we're all taking a page from the history book and mm-hmm. continue.
For sure.
We will continue to, especially with what will happen in the future with climate justice.
Yeah. So Portland Public Schools passed a resolution 3 years ago regarding a climate literacy curriculum that would be implemented into all PPS schools. But it's been 3 years since it's passed. And so far, the most privileged and one of the most white schools in the PPS district has the curriculum, which is Lincoln High School, our school, mm-hmm. and they have been refusing to implement it into other PPS schools. So that's one big thing that we were protesting against on Friday.
Yeah. And that's why we ended up walking down to the Portland School District office, ended up having a conversation with them about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand the school board keeps saying, oh, we're really in favor of it, but it's the administration that seems mm-hmm. to be slowing.
They just like keep brushing it off. Like when we were talking to them, they pretty much just walked away from us when we were trying to have a conversation with them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We started asking them some questions. And then I think after the third question, the woman just walked away. And then another woman came in and then she walked away as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about the climate justice issue a little bit more. How do you see that the impact of climate change occurring? And, you know, many of the countries that are most effective have no voice whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And the people, of course, were most affected here, like in New Orleans. It mm-hmm. was the black people
yes.
of the Third Ward who got most impacted. And right. who still are not back in New Orleans, who've been mm-hmm. shunted off to Houston and many other places. New Orleans has lost some of its most creative people. In the United States as well, it's poor people who, in fact, live in the lowland areas, some of the industrial areas that are getting flooded. So what do we do about that?
I feel like Sharia was right in centering it, the conversation in Portland, because I feel like when we try to talk about globally who's disproportionately being affected by climate change, it can seem really big. So even thinking about it on a smaller issue where Lincoln, as you said, the most privileged school is getting this curriculum, and other communities who, especially in Northeast, who are going to be affected more by climate change are not getting the same curriculum is really important. And then we can think about it on a larger scale, too, who in the U.S. is being affected the most by these disasters. And then also I think there's like a connectedness with companies too after. So thinking about like the shock doctrine, what happened in New Orleans, and then globally our ability to manufacture overseas and use these lax laws in order to push products that are going to be cheaper. But then these underprivileged countries are suffering the most. And I feel like also a lot of the times it's people of color or indigenous tribes who are suffering the worst effects.
Mm-hmm. I think that with stuff like this, there's not necessarily like a clear solution just because there's so much crossover with many different issues for the climate crisis. It crosses over with social justice, racism, like so many different things. So, yes, it is a hard thing to tackle like head on, but it needs to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And then even moving into like the Green New Deal, I think that a lot of people are like, oh, well, why does it address the issue of economic inequality? But if you think about the intersectionality between climate change and economic inequality, they really overlap in thinking about how the 1% is able to use economic inequality and push an agenda that does not address how we're going to fix the issue of climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Economic inequality and the precariousness of life now in this country for a lot of people who, you know, they're one paycheck away from bankruptcy and from losing their rental home or their home that the bank owns. If we had a system of jobs for all and there's work for all, that's for certain, and the jobs paid decent wages, which is one of the Green New Deal planks to, in fact, create good jobs for the people who need them.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me the Green New Deal was really onto something that you were onto just a second ago,
mm-hmm.
that if, in fact, people were secure in that they would have an income and be able to afford shelter and had medical care, they would not be so upset about losing their job in the coal mines,
mm-hmm.
or yeah. losing various kinds of jobs, like in building huge, absurdly expensive and wasteful and gas-consuming autos, or people who are building homes. They're not building homes for poor people. They're building homes for people with money to spend in the suburbs where you have 10 or 15 rooms for two or three people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of that is just wasteful. You know, there's so many jobs that are now dependent on that top 20% or 30% spending their money.
Mm-hmm.
And they are afraid of doing anything about our transportation systems, changing our electric systems. All of those would cost jobs. And so it seems to me the Green New Deal is absolutely right in taking on the economic issue, because the economic issue is part of the way people just can't afford to think about the changes in life that are necessary
mm-hmm.
for dealing with climate change. And, it leads to great groups of working class people and their unions fighting the Green New Deal now.
Yeah.
Because of that, it's going to cost them their livelihoods mm-hmm. and their homes.
We're in a very special time right now with this movement. If this climate crisis is handled in the right way, a lot of issues that go hand in hand can also be helped and solved along the way. With the Green New Deal, equity is huge and needs to be addressed.
I mean, I feel like there's been a lot of pushback from fossil fuel industries, but the people who are working in them, not the people who own them, because they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs, and they are suffering economically because of it. And so I feel like as we transition to a more green economy, that we are going to have these same jobs, but we need to do it in the right way. And really, these people at the top are using the working class in order to push their own agenda and continue making money. But I feel like the Green New Deal really does outline an equal way in which we can stabilize our economy and move to an economy that's more based on renewable sources while addressing both issues. I mean, if you think about like the New Deal, what they did was create government-funded jobs for people who are really struggling. So it really is based off that model, if you think about the Green New Deal and how the government really does need to create these jobs for the working class.
Mm-hmm. Like pushing policies that are going to redirect our economy away from fossil fuel companies and into renewable clean energy jobs mm-hmm. is going to be key for this movement and for the climate crisis. This is just the beginning to this movement, and if we want real change, we've got to keep going. To all the youth out there, keep striking, keep walking out. Go.
I want us to keep educating ourselves and take this energy that happened on Friday and continue moving forward. This is just the beginning. This issue needs to be solved now and addressed now. We don't have enough time for the future generations to solve this. We need to solve it now. And I encourage anyone to get involved mm-hmm. in the movement, and because this is going to be a problem for the youth, and we need to deal with it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want to thank you, Shreya Chinam and Nora Glynn. It was great talking to you today. Keep up the good work. I know you're going to.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
For years this legend has been told of a creature seldom seen. He leaves a footprint so immense it could make a grown man scream.
Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, he goes by all those names. But now there's something scarier and our world's not quite the same. There are beasts who are leaving footprints that make Bigfoot's track look small. And they're messing up our atmosphere, so heed this wake-up call. We call them carbon footprints and they're made of CO2. And who's leaving these big footprints? Well, I'm afraid it's me and you. So here's what to do and here's what to watch. Don't be a carbon Sasquatch.